Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. Our selection this month is by the 2022 winner of the Crime Writers of Canada Award of Excellence in the Short Story category, Elizabeth Elwood. Her winning story, Number 10 Marlborough Place, appeared in the November-December 2021 EQMM. However, for this podcast, she's chosen to read her story in the current issue of EQMM, September-October 2022. Here is The Light on the Lagoon by Elizabeth Elwood.
Carrie Gray could watch the world go by. Her cottage, set on the isthmus of a peninsula, faced a pretty lagoon that drained into the Western Bay, its constant green colour a reflection of the evergreens that lined its far shore. Her deck overlooked the road that meandered around the lagoon to the general store, although the extreme ends of the ring road were hidden from view. A large willow tree at the edge of her property screened the junction where the pub path branched off to Loon Bay, and wild roses concealed the bridge at the pool bay end. Across the water, she had a clear view of the road that ran up the steep hill of the peninsula. In the summer months, the marinas, pubs, and bed and breakfast inns spilled tourists and boaters onto the lagoon road as they exercised their dogs or headed to the store in search of supplies. In the off-season, only the locals were in evidence. Carrie, however, was a mind-your-own-business sort of person, and had never fully realized the full potential of her location until an arthritic knee condemned her to a summer of workouts on an exercise bike. At first she had balked at the diagnosis, but her physiotherapist had been adamant. If she didn't want to end up crippled by the degeneration in her joint, she had to adopt the prescribed regime. 15 minutes on the bike, 3 times a day, gradually building up to half-hour sessions. Carrie's neighbour, Gloria, who worked at the pub, also nagged her to comply. Gloria was a whippet, lean redhead of indeterminate years who considered it her duty to look out for her elderly neighbour, and when she had a bee in her bonnet, she was impossible to resist. Grudgingly, Carrie had ordered the dreaded bike. She was deeply depressed by the pain in her knee and the realization that her daily walks were proscribed until there was some improvement. She had been further discouraged by her doctor's insistence that she be fitted with a cumbersome knee brace to wear when she was able to go out walking again. Furthermore, her grandson had come up from town to take a summer job at the general store and was staying with her for the summer. Much as she loved young Adam, she resented the fact that her daughter had deliberately arranged his summer job so that the family could keep an eye on her. Janet had never understood Carrie's decision to downsize to a cottage by the ocean and indulge in her passion for gardening and painting, and she constantly badgered her mother to come back to live in the family home that she had passed on to them when she moved. The arthritis was one more weapon that Janet could use to argue that a 75-year-old woman with deteriorating joints should not be living alone. "I suppose your mother has told you to spy on me and report back as to whether I'm competent," Carrie said brusquely when Adam arrived. "Pretty much," Adam replied. "She also told me I had to cheer you up because your boyfriend has left to go back east, though I'm not supposed to mention that I know that. And I'm not to talk about the government, the environment, Grandpa's trophy wife, or anything to do with political correctness. Oh, and I'm not allowed to Google the answers to your cryptic crossword clues, or you'll deliver a rocket that'll fly me to the moon. That last bit was Dad's contribution." Carrie eyed him shrewdly. "Little Mr. Blunt, aren't you? I get it from you, Grandma." "Yes, well, you can talk about what you like," grunted Carrie. "It's 18 years since I divorced your grandfather, so I'm long past caring about what he gets up to, And I presume by boyfriend, your mother is sarcastically referring to the gentleman who owned the marine shop on the other side of the harbour and had to go to Newfoundland to sort out the mess his brother made of the family business. And your dad's right about keeping your hands off my puzzles. As to the other items, as long as you don't try to tell me what I can and can't say, we'll get along just fine. Adam grinned. Does that work two ways? Cheeky as well as blunt. Carrie ruffled his shock of tawny hair. Go and get yourself settled in the spare room and cut out the smart talk. Carrie sighed as she watched her grandson lug his backpack into the spare room. She wondered what she had let herself in for. Still, in spite of her reservations, Adam's presence proved to be advantageous. He set out the hated bike for her, putting it on the screened-in section of her deck so that she could enjoy fresh air yet stay free from bugs while she exercised, and before long she realized that there were benefits to the bike that she had not envisioned. She had always sprinkled birdseed in her garden, but had never watched long enough to realize how the critters vied with each other for the pickings. Now she saw that the world in miniature lay on her doorstep. Squirrels chased away chipmunks, blue jays dive-bombed squirrels, chickadees and sparrows darted in whenever the coast was clear, and big black crows ignored the battles raging overhead and did a cumbersome elephant plod along the fence as they ate their fill. The human race was equally fascinating. Maggie, who ran the fish and chip shop, was tied to the counter on work days, but you could set your watch by her shopping expeditions on her days off. Loretta, who lived up the hill, would come down each morning to circle the lagoon while her white husky leapt into the water and swam furiously back and forth. There was Len, who plodded up from the docks with an elderly Scotty that thought it owned the bay and barked furiously at anyone they met. The pub manager's pickup truck set off for the early ferry on Mondays, signalling the pub's closing day. The presence of the postmistress's bright green Nissan indicated that the post office was open. And the absence of the dump truck that was usually parked outside showed that Billy Brown, whose wife Jean managed the general store, had left for work at the gravel pit. So the summer passed less tediously than Carrie had envisioned. Adam was helpful where necessary, without being obtrusive. He talked in what appeared to be a foreign language on subjects like technology, social media, and sci-fi fantasy films, but only during breakfast and dinner. He was cheerful and polite with Carrie's next-door neighbour, having solemnly assessed Gloria as a fellow guardian of his grandmother's well-being. He set off for work punctually each morning, ate his lunch in the store cafe, thus ensuring that Carrie had most of the day to herself, and once home, tucked heartily into the dinner that Carrie served out on the deck, and then refrained from intruding on her evening because he was busy with his tablet and his iPhone. By mid-July, they had settled into a harmonious routine, and Carrie suddenly realized that she was happier than she had been in a long while. Breakfast was the time that Adam was most communicative. One morning he looked up from his plate of bacon, eggs, and blueberry pancakes and posed a question. What was that awful racket outside your bedroom window at 5 o'clock this morning? Blue jays. They wake me up at the crack of dawn if I haven't put their birdseed out. Then the crows hear them and join in. You do realize you've created a monster. Adam looked round as he heard footsteps outside. A moment later, Gloria popped her head around the kitchen door and deposited a jar of rhubarb jam on the counter. "Just made yesterday," she announced. "So, who's created a monster?" she added, coming in and hovering by the breakfast table. "Grandma has. She's put out so much birdseed that the blue jays are lining up and squawking for more. You should see the crap on the railings." Gloria rolled her eyes. "Honestly, Carrie, now I know why your garden looks like that old Hitchcock movie." Gloria was a TCM junkie. Carrie finished her last piece of toast, stood up, and took her plate to the sink. "It's not that bad," she said. "Anyway, it gives me something to look at while I'm stuck on the bike."
"Not to mention watching all the neighbours,"
Adam chimed in between mouthfuls.
"She's got everyone's routines down to the second."
Carrie held up the coffee pot and raised her eyebrows. Gloria nodded and sat down next to Adam.
"Oh, my! Just like that other old Hitchcock movie," she said. "Your grandma will be the first to know if any of the neighbours have homicidal inclinations." Adam looked blank. "Who's Hitchcock?" he muttered.
Carrie brought the mugs of coffee to the table. She smiled to see the expression on her friend's face.
"Welcome to the Generation Canyon," she said.
As the summer continued, Carrie's muscles became stronger, and to her surprise, there was a remarkable improvement in her knee. With the brace, she was able to tend her burgeoning vegetables and get out for walks, two things that cheered her immeasurably. Though she found herself strangely sad to realize that Adam would be leaving in a couple of weeks when school was back in. Still, he would be able to report to his mother that his grandmother was much better and perfectly able to manage on her own. The daily parade of people and wildlife continued to provide amusement, but as August drew towards its end, the tourists became fewer and further between. The yacht club by the pub gradually emptied, and fewer motorhomes trailed around the lagoon to the resort by the store. The evenings were closing in. Carrie's final workout of the day now took place in darkness. Other than the glow from the solitary lamp by the store or the flash of headlights from the occasional car, she pedaled into an inky black void. However, one evening she noticed another light. Someone holding a flashlight was walking around the lagoon. The light was gliding slowly along the ring road in the direction of Pool Bay. Carrie was fascinated to notice a second beam running parallel to the light. At first, it puzzled her, but then she realized it must be a reflection in the water. Two cheery little lights charting the progress of a walker. Idly, she wondered who it was. The lights passed her cottage and disappeared from view. Then, a few moments later, they reappeared on the far side of the lagoon. The walker had crossed the bridge. The twin lights were now following the ring road on the far side of the water and heading back towards Loon Bay. They continued around the circle and vanished as suddenly as they had appeared. "Someone from the yacht club? Giving a boat dog a walk before bedtime," Carrie decided. And thinking about bedtime, it was time she turned in too. Adam might stay glued to his devices for another couple of hours, but she was ready for bed. The following morning bloomed bright and warm. The screen on Carrie's deck was covered with diagonal streaks of sunlight that transformed the lagoon into a batik fabric of silver, grey and brown. But a solitary dog walker was just visible on the far side of the water. Carrie went to the outer deck to get a better look. Judging by the tiny woman's navy shorts, horizontally striped top and white cap, she was of a boat. A Malamute, almost as tall as its smartly dressed owner, plodded at her side. The disproportionate pair disappeared behind the willow tree and did not emerge again, so Carrie knew they had branched off onto the pub path. Curiously, she wondered if the woman had been the walker with the flashlight. Carrie's curiosity was soon satisfied. That afternoon, as she went to the store to buy some milk, she saw the Malamute sitting patiently by the entrance. She patted the dog and went inside, smiling to see Adam on duty at the till. The dog's owner was standing at the checkout, paying for her purchases, and chatting with Gloria, who was in line behind her. The Malamute's owner was a petite blonde with smooth, glossy hair, neatly drawn back in a clip to reveal the classically lovely bone structure of her face. Her nautical outfit looked crisp and fresh, as if newly bought. However, seen up close, her face looked frail and rather drawn, although she managed to smile when Gloria introduced her. "This is Marta Jorgensen. She and her husband are on the Sea Sprite, that gorgeous sailboat that's moored at the yacht club. They're staying for a week, then cruising up to Desolation Sound before heading home to Vancouver. Marta was admiring your boat dog painting on the art rack," Gloria added purposefully. "It could almost be a picture of her dog, couldn't it?" One of Carrie's dear friends, long since departed, had owned a clinker-built fishing vessel and an affable Malamute that had accompanied him everywhere. Carrie had immortalized both dog and boat in a series of paintings which had proved so popular that she revisited the subject every season and created two or three new ones for sale. She ignored Gloria's thinly disguised sales pitch and simply asked, "What's your dog's name? He's gorgeous." "Ajax." Marta looked affectionately towards the dog, whose nose was glued to the glass doors. "He's my constant companion." "And spoiled rotten," said Gloria. "He demands his shore leave first thing in the morning and last thing at night, and won't settle down until he's had it." "I do need to take him out," said Marta. "Sven gets annoyed if Ajax is restless at night, and I don't mind," she added defensively. "I love my dog walks." "Was that you with the flashlight last night?" Carrie asked. "I saw it moving along the lagoon." "Yes, probably. I always take Ajax out around 9 o'clock. Gloria held back as Marta left the store. She watched the woman's retreating back and scowled. "How is it the nicest women so often end up with total jerks?"
"Sven finds more than the dog annoying, does he?"
"He finds everything annoying. That poor woman is a bag of nerves. She reminds me of the wife in Rebecca, constantly anxious in case she does something wrong." "That's another old Hitchcock movie," she added to Adam, who was standing all ears behind the counter. "She even looks a bit like Joan Fontaine. She'd love to have bought that painting of yours today and could easily afford it, but she won't do anything unless her husband okays it. And he, by the way, spent last evening at the pub drinking heavily, and I mean heavily, and complained the entire time he was there. He's one of those tall, snotty, down-your-nose types who thinks he's better than everyone because he's got pots of money." Carrie was used to Gloria's instant likes and dislikes. She winked at Adam. "Cheap tipper, is he?" "That too," snapped Gloria. Carrie got used to seeing Marta and Ajax in the morning and the twin lights marking their progress at night. Towards the end of the week, she also met Marta's husband. Sven walked by as she was watering the dahlias by her garden fence.
"You must be the artist," he said courteously. "Marta told me about your paintings. She said they were very good."
"She likes the ones with the dog like Ajax," Carrie said modestly.
"I'll have to take a look. I'm heading to the store now. Marta fancies a movie night, and I gather they have video and DVD rentals."
"Yes, there's still a demand for them here. VCRs are more reliable than the internet when you're on a boat or in a cabin in the back of beyond."
"Good. Got to keep the wife happy. Marta loves her movies almost as much as she loves that silly dog."
Carrie smiled back. "Yes, I see her with Ajax morning and evening. Well, in the evening I only see her flashlight, but I know it's them." Sven gave a friendly wave and moved on. As Carrie watched him go, the sun went behind a cloud, and a little breeze sprang up from the water. She shivered. She was about to go inside when she noticed that Gloria had been watching the interchange from her deck. Carrie called across to her.
"Your Mr. Cheapskate doesn't seem very cranky this morning. He was very pleasant. And he's on an errand for his wife, so he can't be that bad a husband.
Don't be fooled, snapped Gloria. He's probably trying to make up for being such a pig last night. He's got a nasty temper, and it gets worse as the evening wears on. I don't know how she can stand him when he rolls back to the boat after an evening of drinking. They're moored right at the end of the dock, but last night you could hear him carrying on all the way up at the pub. I'd have pushed the misery overboard, but she just seems to take it. Gloria shook her head in disgust and disappeared back inside her house. Carrie blinked, a little taken aback. Sven Jorgensen had seemed charming, but she realized there could be another side to him. People's public face was often different from the one they presented to their own families. If Gloria was right, one had to feel sorry for Marta. It would not be fun to be trapped on a boat with an uncongenial traveling companion.
The wind blew up in the night, heralding one of the summer storms that periodically came raging through the bay, tossing the leaves, drenching the gardens, and leaving as abruptly as it arrived. Sure enough, the following morning brought a downpour that turned the feathers of the blue jays black as they stormed the deck rail. The clematis on the pergola by Carrie's garden gate was plastered against the trellis work, and her prized dahlias swayed dangerously as the raindrops pounded their heads. There were whitecaps in the bay, and the lagoon was such a maze of rings it looked as if it had been filled with capsized green bottles. However, Marta Jorgensen was undeterred. Sturdily encased in a bright yellow oilskin, she seemed impervious to the deluge as she took her morning walk. And come evening, the twin lights, hazy and distorted by the rain, still made their slow progression through the darkness. By the following morning, the weather had cleared and the skies gleamed storybook blue. The week continued fair, and Marta continued her twice daily excursions. However, her husband never accompanied her. His solo walk, when he had stopped to talk to Carrie, was not repeated, and in spite of the compliments he had paid her at the time, the painting that Marta had admired remained on its rack at the store. When Gloria next joined Carrie for morning coffee, she had lots to say about Sven Jorgensen. None of it good.
"That poor woman is utterly downtrodden," she said indignantly. "I suggested she come to see the band on Sunday, but she wouldn't because Sven doesn't want her along on his pub nights. And you know what else he does? He makes her send him text messages with videos showing where she is and what she's doing any time he's out for more than an hour. The man's a tyrant. How can she put up with him?"
A couple of days later, Carrie realized that Gloria was not the only one bad-mouthing Marta's husband.
The couple's relationship was on many tongues.
The weather had turned again, and another rainstorm was imminent. Carrie's dahlias had taken a beating the previous week, so she had spent the afternoon tying them against the fence to brace them against the predicted downpour. The air was cool, and a biting sea breeze was cutting across the garden, so she and Adam were eating in the kitchen. Adam, for once, was not expounding on the advantages of technology. "It's amazing the way everyone knows everything about everyone around here," he said. "Hardly anyone uses social media, but the news gets around the moment anything happens."
Carrie gave a wry smile. "It's called the Harbour Grapevine, as rife as Twitter and equally unreliable."
"Well, right now it's buzzing about the couple on the Sea Sprite. The dude who runs the gas pump said he beats her up. Well, hits her occasionally anyway, and he ought to know because he's on the dock all day long. Someone should report him."
Carrie refrained from commenting on the confusion of pronouns and replied, "When it comes to domestic abuse, unless a woman makes a complaint, there's nothing the police can do.
and that's assuming what old Gilly told you is actually true. Adam looked mulish. Well, I figure it is because she came in the store on the day it rained and she still had her sunglasses on. Couldn't we tip off that Constable Rowan who comes in for coffee when he's on duty? Not on such flimsy evidence. Carrie frowned. It's only a suspicion, and the police don't like to act unless you can prove something beyond the shadow of a doubt. Besides, if you're right and they come round to question Mr. Jorgensen, it could make things worse. Adam shrugged. Yeah, I know. He'd just get madder and go at her again. What a jerk. She should just blow him away and dump him overboard when they get to Desolation Sound. Adam's voice went up a notch or two. Did you see the news this morning about the couple cruising the Sound in the Nordic 40? He asked excitedly. The boom came across, whacked the man on the head, knocked him unconscious, and took him right off the boat. He went down so fast no one could get to him in time. The guy on the news said bodies that go down there are hardly ever recovered. It's a perfect dumping ground. Carrie fixed her grandson with a steely eye. Drowning victims sink. Dead bodies have air in the lungs. So? So they become floaters. You'd better not try to murder anyone. You'd get caught for sure. And don't try giving Mrs. Jorgensen any ideas about how to dispose of difficult husbands, because for all you know, the rumours are just a lot of vitriol because the locals don't like him. There's a big difference between a domineering husband and one who is physically violent. Adam grunted and went back to his iPhone. Still, for all that Carrie had discouraged Adam's speculations, she couldn't put what he'd told her out of her mind. Could her grandson be right? Could that frail, elegant blonde really be in need of help? Carrie never liked taking gossip at face value, especially as there was so much of it in the harbour, and often as not, totally unfounded. Yet, if there really was a problem, it was hard to stand back and do nothing. Perhaps she should go out in the morning, catch Marta on her morning walk, and invite her in for a coffee. That way, she would be available if Marta wanted someone to confide in. Monday evening, the predicted storm hit. The rain pounded so hard against the deck that Carrie wondered if the twin lights would still appear. But by 9 o'clock, the downpour eased and the gleam of the flashlight broke the darkness. Tonight, however, the reflection was missing. At first, Carrie was puzzled, but then she realized the significance of the single light. The dahlias that she had secured against the fence must be impeding her view of the water. Sure enough, once the walker reached the far side of the lagoon, both light and reflection were clearly visible moving through the dark. By Tuesday morning, the storm had passed, and the air felt fresh and clean. However, Carrie's plans to invite Marta for coffee were forestalled, for when the Malamute appeared for its morning walk, Sven Jorgensen was holding the leash. Carrie was about to go out to intercept him, but stopped when she saw her neighbour coming along the road. Gloria carried a shopping bag in each hand, but she stepped into Sven's path and spoke with him briefly before he tugged the dog to heel and moved on. Carrie hurried onto her deck and waved to Gloria. "What's happened to Marta?" Gloria looked up and saw Carrie at the railing. "She twisted her ankle as she was coming back on board after her walk last night." Gloria turned to glare a dagger or two at Sven's retreating back. "Captain Bligh says it's a lot better this morning, but he thought she shouldn't strain it by walking on it. Besides, they're getting ready to set off, so she's busy on the boat, which means he's leaving her to do all the work." "Do you believe him?" "Well, I knew she'd hurt herself last night. Sven came back to the pub as I was closing up in the kitchen,
and he asked for some ice for Marta's ankle. But whether it was really for her ankle or another part of her anatomy, who's to say? There was a ding-dong of a row yesterday after he got back from the pub, him yelling and her sobbing, then a crash, and everything went so quiet that old Gilly walked over from the gas docks to make sure Marta was all right.
Did he talk to her?
No. When he got close, he heard a bunch of crooning and apologies, and Sven must have heard him, because he popped his head out, apologized to Gilly for the noise, and said he'd tripped over the electric heater. But after he went back down, Gilly heard Marta talking, and she sounded all right, so he went back to the gas dock.
Any idea what they were fighting about? Gloria made a rueful grimace. Sven probably let fly because Billy Brown put him in his place at the pub. What happened?
The news report of that accident in Desolation Pass was on, and they were all discussing it. Billy made some remark that people on sailboats should keep their wits about them, and that Sven had better watch his alcohol intake or he'd be another one who was too blind drunk to see a boom coming his way. Sven took offence and got chippy, and Billy said he didn't give a shit if Sven did end up 2,400 feet deep, and, unlike the Titanic, nobody would ever bother to raise him. Sven was so pissed off he actually cut his evening binge off early. It was only 6:30 when he stormed out. Carrie looked horrified.
And you think he went back to the Sea Sprite and took it out on his wife?
Gloria nodded.
Yes, but she took the dog out more than 2 hours later.
She wouldn't have done that if she'd been badly hurt, so it is possible that she injured her ankle coming back on board. It was after 9:30 when Sven came up to ask for an ice pack. He was sobered up and long past his temper tantrum by then. He seemed genuinely upset for once. And Jean says he whipped over to the store just before closing to rent a movie for Marta, so she must have been okay. Speaking of the store, she added, your grandson got quite excited when I told him about their fight. Is there something he knows that we don't?
I don't know. Didn't you ask him?
Well, yes, but I kind of blew it. He told me about the talk you'd had about proving something beyond the shadow of a doubt, and I made the mistake of making another quip about Hitchcock movies, at which point he got annoyed and clammed up.
Gloria shrugged.
I'm sure he'll tell you later.
Gloria went into her house, but Carrie remained on the deck. She looked up towards Pool Bay. Sven and the Malamute had already crossed the bridge. They would be at least 5 minutes getting back to the boat, and probably another half hour before getting underway. Why not go to see for herself that Marta was all right? But what excuse could she have for turning up at the boat? She had only met the woman once. And then she remembered the boat dog painting. She could give it to Marta, a gift to say she was sorry to hear about her injury. She would have to be quick, but she could make it if she didn't waste time. She hurried inside, put on her knee brace, and left the cottage by the kitchen door. She turned onto the road and set off towards the bridge. With the brace, she could go at a reasonable pace, and she was soon across the lagoon and hurrying towards the store. However, when she reached it and went inside, she was surprised to see that the painting was gone. Jean was at the till.
Just sold, she said, seeing Carrie's expression. The man who owns the Sea Sprite came in to return a video and pick up some fishing equipment, and he bought it for his wife. They're heading out today. By the way, she added, I let your grandson take a break. He said there was something important he had to ask old Gilly.
Carrie nodded and left the store. She returned home slowly. On the one hand, she was pleased that Marta's husband had bought the painting, even though she suspected that it was proof of a pattern of abuse. Each time Sven had rented movies for his wife, it had followed an ugly quarrel. The painting was probably a peace offering too.
Frustrated and still uneasy, Carrie turned into her driveway and trekked up the gravel path. She paused as she reached the garden gate. The clematis on the pergola was dripping from the night's rain, and a couple of strands had broken loose and trailed below the archway. She opened the gate and ducked through. Then she straightened up and gazed around the garden. Her eyes took in the rows of bean poles, the hanging baskets filled with cherry tomatoes, the tubs of lettuce and zucchinis, and then they lit on the dahlias. In spite of the work she had done to anchor them to the fence, the pounding rain and gusts of wind had beaten the flowers down. They were hanging over the string and drooping into the dirt. Carrie frowned.
Last night, she had assumed that the dahlias were hiding the reflection from Marta's flashlight.
But if the puffy heads had already been knocked below the fence line, they would not have been impeding her view. She should have seen the twin lights. She stood still, thinking hard, and tried to figure out the implications of the sight lines. The torrential downpour had started a good half hour before Marta went for her walk, so the flowers would already have been flattened. So why would the reflection of the torch be hidden? As she cast her mind back and tried to visualize the scene, it occurred to her that the lights had seemed a fraction further apart than usual on the far side of the lagoon. Would that explain why the reflection had not shown up on the section of the road in front of her property? But if they were further apart, what would that mean? Carrie gasped. It would mean that the person holding the flashlight had been taller. The light would have been higher. The reflection would have been lower. Marta could not have been walking the dog that night. It must have been her husband. Carrie became aware that her heart was pounding. The thoughts invading her mind were frightening. Why would Sven say Marta had been walking Ajax if he had taken the dog out? Why lie about something so simple? Carrie paled. Unless it was to cover for the fact that Marta was incapable of going out at all. Other than his visits to the pub, Sven Jorgensen had hardly shown his face around the bay. The spurt of activity that night and the following morning had been unusual. The request for the ice pack, the rental of the video, the purchase of the painting. Every contact emphasizing the fact that his wife was up and about as usual. Yet old Gilly said he had heard Marta talking after the fight. That at least was concrete proof that she was not incapacitated. Or was it? Carrie paused, suddenly guessing why her grandson had gone to talk to the elderly dockhand. She pulled out her cell phone and punched in Adam's number. Adam, she said tersely, you're still at the gas docks? I want you to run over to the yacht club and get the manager to keep the Sea Sprite from leaving. Make up any excuse you can. I'll be there in a minute. Someone needs to go aboard and check on Mrs. Jorgensen. Adam's voice trembled as he replied. Carrie's heart went out to him. He was a sensitive boy, and she could tell he was making an effort to be brave. It's too late, Grandma, he said. The Sea Sprite is already out in the bay. Carrie phoned the police the moment she ended the call, and by mid-afternoon the RCMP called her back to report what had transpired. The Coast Guard had intercepted Sven Jorgensen off Pal River and searched the Sea Sprite. On the bunk in the forepeak, they had found the body of his wife. Sven insisted he had not meant to kill her, that she had fallen and hit her head on the corner of the counter in the galley. But intentional or not, There was no question that he had intended to dispose of the body in the cold depths of Desolation Sound, for beneath the matching sets of yellow oilskins in the cabin was a set of downrigger cannonballs, the fishing equipment that he had bought from the general store along with Carrie's painting. Later that evening, over dinner, Carrie and Adam explained to Gloria what had caused them to become suspicious. "It was the lights," said Carrie. "That's how I realized that Sven was lying about Marta walking the dog. But I was confused because you'd said Gilly had heard Marta talking after the fight with her husband. Adam was streaks ahead of me, though. He went round to the docks to find out exactly what Marta had said." Gloria was agog with curiosity. "So why did that make a difference?" Adam explained. "Gilly said she was chattering non-stop, saying she was fine and was keeping busy, and she mentioned Ajax too." Adam paused and took a deep breath. "So I thought about it, and I realized what she was saying didn't make sense. And then I remembered what you told us about the texts. Mr. Jorgensen must have panicked when he heard Gilly outside the boat. He knew he had to do something to make it sound like his wife was alive, so he played one of the videos stored on his phone. That's what Gilly heard." Gloria's eyes bulged. "I said the man was a rat, but what a cold-blooded brute. All that running around for ice packs and videos and paintings, it was just a big cover-up. Poor, poor woman." Carrie's eyes were sad. "If only we could have done something to prevent it happening," she said. "I should have listened to you when you wanted me to report him last week, Adam." Adam looked at her solemnly. "It probably wouldn't have made a difference, Grandma," he said. "Unless Mrs. Jorgensen was prepared to leave him, it would have happened sooner or later. At least you figured out what happened and made sure he didn't get away with it." "Where did they catch him?" asked Gloria. "Just before Powell River," said Kerry. "He'd rounded Grief Point and was heading towards Lund." She smiled wryly at her neighbour. "The sergeant told me Sven had just altered his course to north by northwest." Gloria's mouth flew open, but before she could speak, Adam cut her off. "Hey, another old Hitchcock movie," he said. Gloria's eyebrows elevated into her hairline. Adam grinned. "I googled him," he said.
The Light on the Lagoon is copyrighted by Elizabeth Elwood. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.elleryqueenmysterymagazine.com.